As I said earlier, our theme for this month is, what does it mean to be a people of creation? What does it mean that we Unitarian Universalists are a people of creation? And there are a lot of ways of understanding that, and we will be exploring several of them over the course of the month. This morning we'll be taking a look at creativity, that aspect of creation. And so I have three stories for you. The first, I have no idea if it's actually true, but it's such a good story, I'm going to tell it anyway. It's about the Renaissance sculptor artist Michelangelo. And the story goes that someone approached him once and asked him how it was that he could take a big piece of granite or a slab of marble and craft from it, turn it into a sculpture, let's say a stallion. How did he make that stone into that statue? And according to the story, Michelangelo explained that he didn't, that that's not what he did. That what he would do is he would stare at the stone. He would look deeply into that slab of granite or marble, or, and he would wait until he saw the stallion that was inside of it wanting to get out. From that point, he said it was easy. All he had to do was chip away everything that wasn't stallion. First story. Second story. First grade teacher. Every year at the end of the year, all the first grade classes would put all their art up on the walls around the school. And this particular teacher's class every year seemed to have art that was more artistic than the other first grade classes. And we're not talking about having been pressured to be, you know, Picasso, which all first graders are, or to be Michelangelo, but there was something more mature about their art than in any of the other first grade classrooms, and this was year after year after year was true. And so someone asked her how she taught them technique. They're first graders. How did she teach them to do this? And she said that what she would do is she would walk around the class watching the kids as they drew, and she would help them know when it was time to stop. Third story. This one is really well known. You've probably heard it at least from me many times, if not other places as well. A little girl is in her Sunday school class, and she's feverishly drawing away, and the teacher comes over and sort of patronizingly says, "That's beautiful. What is it that you're drawing?" And the little girl stops and looks up and says, I'm drawing God. And then she goes back to work. And the teacher says, well, you can't draw God. Nobody knows what God looks like. And without looking up, the girl says, well, if you'd let me finish. Three stories and three lessons about what creativity requires. Michelangelo tells us that we need vision. We need imagination. We need the ability to see something that others don't. To see something maybe that isn't even there, but to see it, and to see it clearly. The first grade teacher tells us we need discipline. We need some kind of craft, some mastery of craft, and an understanding of technique, if you will. And then that wonderful little girl in her Sunday school class, who I think has the spirit of a UU, she tells us we need faith, trust in ourselves, in that vision that we have, in the craft we have developed, to have faith that what we imagine can be. Vision and imagination, discipline, craft, faith, trust. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't particularly pay attention to what awareness we're supposed to have each month. But this month is Jazz Appreciation Month. So if you don't regularly appreciate Scott for what he does, this is the month to do it in. Make sure you appreciate Scott DeVoe. Yeah. That's the first time the 9:15 clapped faster than the 11:15. probably in the history of the church. So I decided that I would look to jazz musicians to help explore this, since it is Jazz Appreciation Month. And so I found some quotations on each of those three lessons. Chick Corea said, on the subject of vision, of imagination, "Only play what you hear. If you don't hear anything, don't play anything." Bill Evans said, "Keep searching for that sound you hear in your head until it becomes reality." Charlie Parker, "I keep thinking there's bound to be something else. I could hear it sometimes, but I couldn't play it." See, these people who hear what others don't hear, and when they hear it, they can make it. Miles Davis said, "Don't play what's there, play what's not there." Again, what do you see? What do you hear? Where's your vision? On the subject of discipline, Miles Davis said, "It's not the notes you play, it's the notes you don't play." Miles said, "Don't worry about playing a lot of notes, just find one pretty one." Dizzy Gillespie said, "It's taken me all my life to learn what not to play." Now, on that third subject of faith and trust, I'll come back to that in a moment. So imagination, let's look at that for a minute. When I used to teach theater arts to groups of teenagers at summer camps or at workshops in churches or adults in churches, there was a game that I loved to play called Anything But. And the way it worked is you'd take a bunch of things, ordinary household things, like a ladle or a plate or a clean and sanitized and unused toilet plunger, a comb, anything you could think of, and you tossed it in a pile, and then you'd have all the participants in a circle around that pile. And if you have a family living with you or friends who are visiting, you can make a circle around a pile of stuff yourself when you get home, or do it with people during the social hour. You could make a circle on the floor and show what kind of place this is. So we have this pile of stuff in the middle, and people were invited to come forward, pick up something, and use it as anything but what it is. So a ladle couldn't be used as a ladle. It could be a microphone, could be a hat, could be a place to put your beard and get it out of the way. It could be anything. A comb could become a mustache. The only rule was anything but. And it was amazing how usually, in the beginning, it was hard. People sat for a long time, kind of staring at the pile and not wanting to do anything. And then, as people started to, it started to happen faster and faster, because people started to see the possibilities and to let themselves see the possibilities. And there was one group where, by the end, somebody was saying they couldn't even quite remember what the thing was actually for, because now all they could see was all the things it could be but that. Imagination, it's a powerful thing. So I want to do an exercise with you, and what I'm going to invite you to do right now is, if you're comfortable, close your eyes, and as I like to say, if you're not comfortable closing your eyes, then close your eyes. But I want you to close your eyes and imagine a flag. Get it real clear in your mind's eye, a flag. Okay, pencils down, eyes open. I'm going to ask a series of questions, and if what I ask is true for you, raise your hand. If it's not, keep your hand down. And if none of my questions match your experience, keep it to yourself. You can talk about it during social hour. But we're going to focus on my questions, because I'm up front. So, for how many of you was your flag waving in the breeze? Okay. For how many of you was it kind of hanging limp? Okay. For those for whom it was... was it a daytime or nighttime? How many was it daytime? And how many nighttime? OK, Okay, for those who are daytime, was it a bright sunny day or a cloudy overcast day? So bright and sunny? Overcast? All right, a few more. The flagpole, how many was it wood? How many was it metal? How many was it of indeterminate origin? All right, the top of the flagpole, did it have some fancy thing on it? Was it plain? Okay, one more. Was the flagpole on a building, connected to a building in some way? Or was it sort of out by itself? Okay, you all did it wrong. Because what I asked you to do was imagine a flag. So if you had done what I asked, all you would have seen was a flag. In your mind, it would have been a flag, maybe taking up the whole of your vision, or maybe there'd just be blank space around it, but you'd have a flag. But you didn't do that. You imagined the day, some of you probably knew what it smelled like. You put in all these details because your imagination couldn't let you do anything but that. Imagination is powerful, and it's one of the things that is unique about humans. We can imagine, and in fact, we have to imagine. We imagine all the time. Even those of us who are sort of cramped, who don't let ourselves open up and be creative, those of us who maybe are held in by fear, well, even we are imagining. I mean, after all, it's true that you never imagine, you never are afraid of what's happening. You're always afraid of what you imagine is going to happen next. I heard this explained this way. When you see a bear in the woods, you're not afraid of seeing the bear. You're afraid of the bear running at you. And when the bear is running at you, you're not afraid of the bear running at you. You're afraid of the bear catching you. And when the bear catches you, you're not afraid of the bear catching you. You're afraid of it mauling you. And we could keep going. You're never afraid of the thing in front of you. You're afraid of the thing you imagine is going to happen next. So even those of us who feel like we have no imagination because we're so cramped, we're cramped because we're imagining why we should be cramped. Imagination. Discipline. The second of those three lessons from those three stories. And there's another story that I tell all the time, so I know you've heard it, but it is such a good story, and this one is true. Pablo Casals, who is known to have been probably the greatest cellist in the history of the instrument, practiced his scales for hours every single day of his life. In fact, when he died at about 100 years old, he had already spent hours practicing his scales that morning. And he'd been asked in an interview about a year before why such an unquestioned master of the instrument would do something so basic, so simple, so simplistic as to practice scales. And his response was, "I think I'm beginning to make some progress." Discipline, practice. And you may already be thinking, well, this is all creativity. I'm not creative. It has no bearing on my life. When you choose not to say that thing to the person who just really annoyed you, that was an act of discipline. And it was an act of discipline and service to your imagination that things could be better with this person. That's the only reason it would be worth holding yourself back, because you imagine, maybe we could work this out. And if you choose not to hold yourself back, it's because you imagine that there is no reason not to. So again, creativity, even where we don't think to look for it. Imagination and vision, discipline, craft, faith. Up on the altar, We have a lot of rhythm instruments. So I'm going to ask those of you who feel so moved, and I'm going to ask some of you to please feel so moved, to come forward and pick up any instrument you feel like picking up, and then kind of make a cluster up here on the chancel. Don't think too long about it, just whatever grabs you first.
I thought we got some bad force on top of your seat.
No, it's too slow.
This is for the drums.
All right, does everybody have an instrument? All right. Now, I'm going to teach you something important. When I was in high school, our orchestra conductor told us that the most important thing for a high school orchestra was to respond when she would say, "Instruments up." All right, so I'm going to teach you some rhythms, and I want you to respond back, okay? Why we did that? It was fun. A thing you should have in church whenever possible. Because why not? Okay, so let me rephrase the question. In the context of this sermon, why do you think we did that?
Creativity.
Okay, in the context of the lesson about faith, why do you think we did that? We trusted that it would work out. Folks had faith that I was not going to totally embarrass them. We as a community trusted each other enough to risk. Even those who weren't participating were part of that trust. The ones up here were trusting that you guys are not going to make fun of them during social hour. It was an act of faith that allowed us to create that experience of risk. For myself, it was an act of faith because I had no idea if it was going to work. I did it in the first service, but you never know. That could have really just crashed and burned really fast. But I had faith that the worst thing would happen was it wouldn't work. And that's the piece, the last piece of these lessons about creation, and it's really the core of that faith and that trust, and that is, it can't fail. It just can't. I lived for a while in an artist studio. There were 60 of us, and I made masks. And I would take a month or two on a mask, trying to make it just perfect. And there was this guy who lived down the hall from me, Greg Lefebvre. He was the only one of the 60 of us who actually made his entire living from his art. The rest of us all did other things. And Greg would stand in my doorway watching me work, just shaking his head. And one day I couldn't take it anymore. I was like, Greg, what are you doing? He's like, Eric, this is just not the way to go about it. What do you mean? He said, well, what you do is you spend a month, maybe two, working on a mask, and if at the end it's not any good, you've wasted a month, two. I said, okay, Greg, what do you do? And he said, every day I get up, I go down to my studio, and I make a piece of art. I start in the morning, I finish that night. One piece of art. Then the next morning, I come down and I make a second piece of art. And I keep doing that every day, one piece a day. No judgments, no regrets, one piece of art every single day as a discipline. At the end of the month, I take all the pieces and I spread them out, and most of them are garbage, and I throw them away. But two, maybe three, are beautiful. Those I keep. He said, at the end of your month, Eric, you may have nothing to show for it because you don't take the risk. You're afraid it's not going to be any good. I go down, I know it's not going to be any good, but there'll be something. There'll be something that does, in fact, work. You know, Thomas Edison is said to have, and I looked this up, this is true, have made 10,000 attempts to perfect the light bulb. That means 9,999 of those attempts were failures. And he was once asked what it felt like to fail 9,999 times, and he said, I never failed. I simply discovered 9,999 ways it won't work. All of them were successes. Miles Davis said, do not fear mistakes. There are none. He also said, sometimes you have to play a long time to be able to play like yourself. Sometimes you have to play a long time till you can play like yourself. This learning how to own and use our innate creativity is one of the reasons we are here. Here on this planet and here in this congregation. We are creators, whether you want to be or not. When Deborah Rose was one of our lay worship weavers, she preached a sermon on creativity that to this day people talk to me about. And she was saying, you know, it's not about painting, it's not about sculpture, it's how do you put the food on the plate when you serve it to your family? That's creativity. How do you fold the laundry so that people know you care? How do you arrange the tchotchkes when you put them back after dusting? We live lives of imagination, of vision, of discipline, of faith, of courage, whether we mean to or not. One of the things a community like this can do is help us to mean to do it by encouraging us and supporting us and reminding us that creativity is not only at our core, it is our core. I hope this day each of us finds some way to remember that and to act on it.